Oh, good morning, friends. Glad to be with you. Thanks, worship team, for leading us in song. Man, when we were singing, God, whatever comes my way, I will trust you, it struck me, what a prayer to pray. I'm not totally comfortable with that, Ryan, but thanks for leading us into that. Whatever comes my way, I will trust you. Lori, thanks for welcoming us into service. Kristen, thanks for your prayer. I confess my inner Shannon Amburn was coming out when you were praying. I was getting emotional here, and I don't like to do that before sermons. So anyway, thank you. Thank you for your words. I'm glad to be in this space with you. Here's a few thoughts on our gospel passage. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was being swamped. And the disciples feared with a great fear. And Jesus was in the boat with them. Not sure if I've mentioned this to you before, but when I was a young boy, just barely old enough to have memories of this time, actually, I suffered through a season of nightmares. I wonder if you recall the last time you had a nightmare, woke up in the middle of the night after a nightmare. I still remember the worst part about them was the moment I'd wake up, I'd realize they were just a bad dream, and yet nevertheless, I was still carrying in a way I couldn't shake that feeling of terror, just sort of lingering in the air around me. Do you remember those moments after nightmares? And every night, it was the same routine. I'd wake in a sweat. I'd be frightened, feeling alone in a dark room, and I'd cry out for my mom, hoping she would wake and come and rescue me. Well, I tell you this because I often think about that season of my life when I imagine our scene from Mark 4 today, which in many ways feels to me a lot like a nightmare. Darkness had just settled in when a group of boats pushed offshore. This is after dark, into the Sea of Galilee at Jesus' instigation, no less. And I don't know what you've heard about the Galilean Sea, but this body of water is nothing to mess with. It's located 680 feet below sea level, surrounded entirely by hills. And because of that, however this works, like a weatherman maybe could help you understand this. However this works, 680 feet below sea level, surrounded by these walls, the resulting air pressure in the region around the Sea of Galilee makes it prone to sudden and violent windstorms with no warning. It is, quite frankly, a dangerous and frightening place, the Sea of Galilee, in the best of times. But at night, in the middle of a storm, it's nothing short of terrifying. So that when this dark storm arises in Mark chapter 4 today, Jesus' disciples are indeed terrified, which you should understand is really saying something, given that many of Jesus' disciples are in fact professional fishermen used to a sea. If this moment terrifies them, just imagine what effect it would have on regular land-loving folks like you and like me. Which is why when that storm arose and those waves crashed in and that boat was being swamped, Mark writes, the disciples feared with a great fear. It's his way of saying they were on the verge of wetting their pants. This was terrifying. When I was going through my season of nightmares, my cousin Matt, who's a year and a half older than I am, he used to ask me if I wet the bed when I had my nightmares. And I never sensed that he asked it with any like malice or ill intent. He was like a brother to me. I think he was just genuinely curious to know, when you have a nightmare, do you wet the bed? Did you pee your pants, Kevin, while you were dreaming? He would ask me. And I think it actually disappointed him to learn that I hadn't. But even so, I absolutely understood and understand still to this day what Mark means when he writes, they feared with a great fear. As my family tells it, it was no secret where my nightmares during this season came from. Over the span of just a few weeks, I experienced the two most terrifying episodes of my life. Back-to-back traumatic events that hit me hard and haunted my dreams for months to come. The first of those, you will all remember this, was the day that Mount St. Helens blew its top. Remember that? Where I lived, the sky darkened like the apocalypse was upon us. The second was a tornado that hit my home just a week and a half later. And although I didn't have the language for it at the time, I truly felt like we were experiencing an apocalypse, whatever that meant to my five-year-old brain. And I really thought the world was about to end in this moment. As it turns out, of all places, we lived on Ash Street when Mount St. Helens erupted. When the guts of that mountain filled the morning sky, again, with a darkness that felt like a horror film to me when it occurred, and no one had told me this was going to happen. It just happened one morning. I'd never before and never since experienced something quite like that. It was 8:32, I think, when that thing erupted, and my skies went black like midnight where we lived. To this day, if anyone says to me this one particular phrase, all hell broke loose, I think of that moment I stood staring at that sky, not understanding why the world was falling apart. And then a week or so later, a tornado strikes my hometown. Ah, salt on a wound. It happened to be on a day that my mom was flying home from a job interview in Seattle, which is where we would move shortly after. My grandma ran inside our house in a frenzy as this tornado was coming. She grabbed water and granola bars, and she rushed the two of us downstairs. I don't know where my grandfather was at this moment. And we sheltered under a pool table in the basement for hours. All the while, the little TV across the room, we were watching it from under the pool table, the little TV across the room kept us updated on what was occurring, including the fact that a plane had gone down at our local airport. It wasn't my mom's plane, but the hours before we knew that, when we were still in the dark, the not knowing, man, I can feel it in my stomach today just telling you about that moment for me. Consequently, no one in my family was a bit surprised when nightmares began to haunt my sleep. It was as if my body was set to some sort of timer on the inside. And each night, I'd wake in a sweat, terrified, crying out for my mom to rescue me, which, of course, is exactly what she'd do, rushing to my room, saying to me over and over, "It's okay. There's nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing to be afraid of." And yet, no matter how many times she'd say those words, the nightmares continued. The fear simply wouldn't cease until, that is, months later, when a friend of my mom's, from work, I think, but I'm not sure, offered some advice that ended up putting an end to my nightmares entirely. In the middle of a dark sea, a great storm arose and raged around those disciples like the devil's tempest, like Satan himself had emerged from the deep in the Sea of Galilee to snatch them from this earth. And they were terrified, fearing, as Mark says, with a great fear. And perhaps for the first time in their lives, those fishermen thought, "We're not going to make it." They thought, for the first time, "We're going to drown." You can just imagine poor Matthew, the tax collector, who'd never been out on the sea before. I'm guessing he most certainly did pee his pants that day. And as the storm raged around them, a storm of panic began to rage within them, which is precisely when one of those disciples noticed Jesus. apparently the world's heaviest sleeper, sawing logs on a cushion in the back of the boat as this storm raged. And they were, Mark says, astonished at him. Maybe more accurately, we might say they were actually angry with him. And they began to scream, "Wake up! Wake up! Do you not care that we are perishing?" And you know how it goes from there. With just three words, Jesus calms the entire storm. Or if you want to get all theologically nerdy about it, and you know I do, in Greek, it was actually just two words. Siopa, pephemosa, like some spell from Harry Potter. Peace, be still. And it was. But what I'd actually like to highlight this morning is this. Not what Jesus does say that day, but rather, and curiously, what Jesus does not say to his disciples that evening. Namely, in the entire episode, Jesus never once, and I wonder if you noticed this, Jesus never once says to his disciples, "There is nothing to be afraid of." Now, he asks them why they are afraid, but never does he say, "There is nothing to fear." The very words my mom spoke to me night after night, the very words I've spoken to my own children in the exact same situation, the very words I suspect millions of moms and dads and aunts and uncles and grandmas and grandpas have whispered in the ears of frightened children in an effort to comfort them, "There is nothing to be afraid of." And yet, that is precisely what Jesus does not say this night. And why? Because as comforting as those words are meant to be, the reality is they simply are not true. At least not entirely. For the fact is, a Galilean storm is fearsome, as are each and every one of the terrifying winds and waves that threaten us as well. Fearsome things are, in fact, very real. And Jesus never once says anything different. It is a hard, but it is an honest truth. There is much to be afraid of. When we experience our own Galilean storm, the storms we know rage around us all the time, like a tempest from the devil. Satan lurks around us. Whether isolation or pain, whether our own sense of purposelessness or sadness, and these are fearsome things. When we experience rejection, socially or professionally, when we lose a job or a loved one, these are fearsome things. When we face money problems, or a sense of failure, or a season of grief, these are fearsome things. When the waves and winds roar around us and we endure illness or suffering, or endure the illness of suffering of our loved ones, these are fearsome things. When we find ourselves being tossed about by these types of winds and waves on our own Sea of Galilee, these are fearsome things. And Jesus never says otherwise. Which, of course, is not to say that we should seek to soothe children by telling them, "You better be afraid. It's right to be afraid." I think even in his most playfully mischievous moments, I'm sure, even Uncle Noland never said that to Carolyn or Mason when they were truly frightened. And neither does Jesus. So what does Jesus do in our story? Well, he does the very same thing he's done since the beginning, which, as it turns out, was the very same thing my mom eventually did for me. I never knew exactly who it was that gave my mom the advice about my nightmares. My mom may have told me at some point, but I have at this point forgotten. But now I wonder, was it someone who knew this story from Mark 4 today about the nightmares the disciples endured and what Jesus did in response to it? As my mom describes the story, the last time she can remember me waking up from months of nightmares every night, the last time she can remember me waking up from a nightmare sweat, crying out for her to wake, she came into my room, sat on my bed, rested her hand on my arm, and simply said to me, "I am right here with you. You are not alone." And Siopa Pesavamosa, the wind and the waves were still in my life. Kristen, I'm blaming this on you here. You see, as it turns out, I didn't need my mom to tell me there was nothing to be afraid of. I needed her to tell me that even when I was afraid, when the storms were raging full force around me, she was right there with me, and I was not alone. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that the boat was being swamped. And the disciples feared with a great fear. And Jesus, Mark tells us, was right there in the boat with them. What those disciples needed was not for Jesus to tell them there was nothing to fear. That would have been a lie. There is much to fear. Rather, what they needed was for Jesus to affirm that he had not left them on their own, which is why they cried out, which is why they asked, "Do you not care that we are perishing?" The Galilean windstorms are indeed very real for them and for us. But, and this is important, they do not have the final word in today's story. Not because there are no fearsome thing in this sea of our lives. Not because there are no storms, no fierce winds, no waves. But because we are not alone. Because you stand with me, and I stand with you, because God remains right here with us, among us, as Kristen prayed. And therefore, we meet these storms together, saying to the one who hurts, to the one who struggles, to the one who aches, to the one who fears, we are right here in this boat with you, and you are not alone. Jesus never once promises that the storms won't return to our lives. But what Jesus does promise is that when they do, he'll be right there in the boat with us. And that, more than anything else, is both his gift and his urgent calling today. It is his ministry of presence. And I pray it can be ours as well. Amen.